This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and we are recording this on Tuesday night, 2 days before the NFL draft. At this point, Adam, I have kind of just taken all of the rumors that I hear and say, none of these are real. None of these are probably going to happen. Let's just get to the draft and let's get this thing done. And I think that that's, you know, where pretty much everybody is at this point.
Yeah, although my favorite rumor is out in full force with the Patriots supposedly having heavy interest in Will Greer, which of course doesn't mean anything, which it probably means he'll be picked by somebody else, but I love that rumor. I mean, for what it is, I love it.
I mean, last year you and I both were in love with Lamar, and then it came out at around the same time that the Patriots had a lot of interest in Lamar, and they passed on him twice. So this kind of fits into that kind of category for me with Will Greer. Although before this rumor even started yesterday, I was working up my last and final mock draft, which will be on the site tomorrow, and I had the Patriots taking Will Greer in the third round. I'm going to move him up to the second round, I think, now. But I do believe that they have some interest in the guy. Like, I don't think that that's overblown. I do think that the first round buzz that he's starting to get is overblown. But I do think that, you know, we both think that he's a nice fit and he works perfectly in the New England system and as kind of the heir apparent, or at least an option to be the heir apparent to Tom Brady. And they're kind of come due in terms, not, this is not the quarterback show, but they kind of come due in terms of picking a quarterback early, in the sense that it seems like every 2 or 3 years Belichick pulls the trigger on a quarterback, you know, somewhere in on the day two range, whether it was the Jimmy Garoppolo pick or then the Jacoby Brissett pick, or like Kevin O'Connell a few years before that, or Ryan Mallett. You know, every like 2 or 3 years, Belichick picks a guy in like the third round that's a quarterback that everybody's like, well, you know, they had Tom Brady, what are they doing? And at the most important position on the field and maybe all of sports, you can never have too much depth there. You can never have too much potential there. And so I think that that aspect of it, I kind of put out there that my thought is that it's either going to be Greer or Ryan Finley if they do go quarterback early. And then maybe like Stidham and Brett Ripon will be like their day three options if they want to add another kind of, well, maybe a guy that has a little bit more potential than Danny Etling, but isn't, you know, one of those early round guys.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. We'll get back to that later.
Absolutely. Let's talk about linebackers, because this is our last position. We did it. We did all the positions. Linebacker is our last one. We saved the best. No, we saved the worst for last, if we're going to be honest. Not a ton of things to be excited about with this linebacker group outside of the top two prospects and Devin Bush and Devin White, who are absolute studs at the position, who are also likely top 10, top 15 picks, depending on which big board or mock draft you kind of look at. I tend to lean towards top 10 picks for both of those guys. I think the Raiders at number 4, the Tampa Bay Bucks at number 5 have their eye on one of the Devins, and then the other one will probably come pretty soon after that. So that leaves the Patriots, I think, with a lot of guys that what I tried to do, at least when I was making our list for today, was put guys that I can kind of pencil in designed roles for them for the pads. That two-down linebacker role is a lot of what these guys are going to be about. And then also having a role in the kicking game, I think it's going to be key for a lot of these dudes as well. So that's kind of where we're coming from with this list. The first name on the list, though, is a guy that I think that could probably, with some refinement in his technique, on his take-on technique, and also in some of the pursuit angles he takes, has the athleticism and the build to be an every-down linebacker in the New England system, and that is Mack Wilson out of Alabama. Obviously, a very rough college football playoff for Mack Wilson. He was kind of exposed by Oklahoma and by Clemson at times in those two games, but he's very athletic and kind of moves very well in space, and he adds that special teams value as well.
Yeah, one of the first things I noted when I watched, and it's funny, we were talking about this earlier. During the season, I liked him a lot better than when I took closer looks at him after. But it's one of those things where, you know, one of the first things that I liked about him was his zone drops and his, you know, like you said, playing in space against the pass. He's not, you know, as good of a, you know, pass defender as, you know, like an elite guy or anything like that, but he generally knows where he's going. He recognizes routes as they're developing and stuff like that. So that's, I think, his strength. I think he gets blocked pretty easily in the run game, to be honest. Yeah. And a lot of times they would have two sort of linebackers in the box and they'd run to his side off tackle and he wouldn't be able to sort of get the guy before he turns the corner. So I'm not sure, you know, what his NFL value is as a run defender. I'm sure he has potential, but I just didn't really quite see it on a consistent enough basis at Alabama. I mean, one of I don't think he played well in the Georgia game either. And it was funny because then, you know, you look at the the NFL.com write up on him too, and he said, you know, like, had trouble getting off blocks in the Georgia game. But the funny thing about that is like, that's also one of Devin White's worst games as far as, you know, his film. So you might just chalk it up to Georgia having a really good, especially interior offensive line. I think, you know, if you're looking for a guy who's going to be sort of a, you know, smart, you know, pass defender out of the linebacker position, I think, you know, Wilson's good. I just don't see him being a consistent force in the run game.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that with you. I think the thing that stands out for me with Wilson is that he's still a little over 6'1", 240 pounds. So he's got a little bit of girth to him, right? Like, he's got a little bit of thickness and he's kind of got that Patriots linebacker body for what they want to look for in their off-ball linebackers. When you add that into the equation, that he's probably would be on day one their best coverage linebacker, just in terms of his skills and his ball skills in particular. I mean, he makes some plays on the ball and some interceptions on his tape that are like he's a safety out there, right? You know, jumping pass routes underneath and also jumping up and getting balls, kind of playing as that deep safety and like a deep hole in a cover two scheme or something like that. So I think that those things are nice about him, that he kind of is a little bit of a compromise, I would say, towards their like thumping linebacker style of the Juwan Bentleys and the Dante Hightowers and the Landon Robertses, and like kind of more of an athletic guy. And he's also got that ability, like we said at the top, with a lot of these guys, he was a core special teamer for Alabama and did a pretty good job, especially on kick returns. There's some really like highlight reel type blowups of him, coming down the field and making tackles in the kicking game. So I think that Belichick will like that about him. I think the thing that really stood out to me watching the college football playoff games for him was just that he doesn't have a great feel for or run instincts, I would say, in run defense. And he's hesitant, right? Like, he doesn't know if he wants to take on blocks or if he wants to slip blocks. And he doesn't really read run lanes and rushing schemes very well, to the point where he's taking good pursuit angles. You can be a slower linebacker, like Juwan Bentley is such a great example of this. You can be a slower linebacker, a guy that's not running, you know, like a very fast 40. I think I don't think that Mac ran the 40, but he would probably do pretty well in that. But he has such great pursuit angles, talking about Juwan Bentley, where he's really kind of mirroring the running back. His eyes are in the backfield and he's able to kind of figure out where that running back is going to hit the crease, right? Like, what hole is he going to hit? Where is he going to go? And that kind of makes up for some of that lack of athleticism. Mac Wilson's like the opposite. He doesn't really know where the running back is going to go, so he's reacting to a lot of things and then chasing. And I think that that's going to be a problem for him to get on the field on early downs. But I think that in terms of his movement skills and his ability to play in space, he fits the Patriots mold as a guy that maybe can develop with the size and strength and hand usage and stuff like that, with the fact that he also has some coverage skills to him. He, to me, I think is probably somebody that a lot of people have penciled in on day two, maybe like a third round linebacker or something like that. I don't know if the Patriots are going to want to be in that pool for him at that point in time. I don't I like we said at the top I don't know if a lot of these guys are necessarily guys that you're going to want to invest heavy draft capital in, but there are some things to like about Mack Wilson. I know a lot of people are like really down on him after the college football playoff. Yeah. The next one here is a guy that I think is like checks a whole lot of boxes for the Patriots and is a really interesting prospect for them. And that is Jermaine Pratt from NC State, another like well-built linebacker prospect, 6'2", 240 pounds. He was also a team captain on the defense at NC State, which we know the Patriots love. And he has that kind of versatility where you'll see him playing a little bit of that in between like slot defender type role and also off the ball linebacker and maybe even a little bit of outside linebacker as well. And he racked up some gaudy tackle totals last year as well.
Yeah, I actually like Pratt probably the most out of any of these guys.
Yeah.
I think already he's got a safety background.
Yeah.
And he's so he's a converted safety, and like, you know, I like how they did move him around. I mean, at one point in the Clemson game, he was covering what's his name, this little slot guy,
Hunter Renfro.
He was covering Hunter Renfro, which is a total mismatch, but I mean, he was in the zip code for these things and making tackles and everything like that. I think he's kind of the opposite of Wilson in the way, you know, I don't think he's got all the necessarily like the mental aptitude stuff of the position yet, because he's still relatively new to it. But I think like the way he plays is, you know, very aggressive. And I don't think he makes, you know, I don't think he leaves a lot of plays on the field as far as, you know, full effort. You know what I mean? I feel like he really attacks guys in there. And I feel like he'd be a good, like, investment in the fact that I think he's a terrific athlete. I think he's very big. And I think, you know, the more he learns the position, he's got enough physical tools to be a pretty good weapon. And he can just do a lot of different things. I think one of the things he did well, another thing he did well in that Clemson game was rush the passer, as a blitzer. He's a pretty tough guy to block when he gets a full head of steam. So I like Pratt. I think he's, you know, a decent guy to take a flyer on.
Yeah, I like Pratt a lot too. He's my linebacker 5 right now. Probably my final rankings at this point, but I really do like him for the Patriots as well. He is a converted safety, so he has 1 year at linebacker, and in that 1 year at linebacker, he had 104 tackles, 10 tackles for loss, and 6 sacks.
Yeah.
So as soon as they moved him to linebacker, his production just went from, you know, modest safety production for sure to really, really good production at linebacker almost instantly. And I think one of the things that's interesting about him too, and also the next guy that we're going to talk about in Terrell Hanks, is that with Pratt, there's this new role kind of in college football. I have heard it called the slot linebacker, and I've heard it called the hanger, and it's kind of that halfway role, right, where they're really playing in the slot. And you mentioned it with Hunter Renfro, him covering Hunter Renfro. And at some point in time, it seems like the NFL eventually catches up to college football when it comes to a lot of those like new positions, right?
Right.
Like a few years ago, it was like the hybrid linebackers, right? The jacked up safeties that came down and were playing in the box and were playing like a box safety role, like a Patrick Chung, for example. Now it's, I think, kind of becoming more two things. One, it's these jacked up, slot linebackers, and it's big slot wide receivers. So the college football is kind of reacting to it, and they're saying, we're going to actually put these athletic linebackers on these big slot guys instead of corners, because the corners are just getting out muscled by, you know, the N'Keal Harrys and the A.J. Browns and all those guys. So that, I think, is like an interesting thing, because the Patriots are always ahead of the curve when it comes to this. They're always kind of one step ahead of, you know, they were one of the first teams to convert Chung into that hybrid linebacker role. So I really do wonder if the Patriots get ahead and pick one of these guys like a Jermaine Pratt, who has that kind of versatility to maybe, you know, he ran a 4.57. He ran a faster 40 than a lot of cornerbacks did at the combine and a lot of safeties. So you have a guy that's pretty athletic, but is also has the ability at 240 pounds to rack up over 100 tackles. You know, that's a pretty good combination. And I think that really the only thing that I look at Pratt and I say, you know, where his flaws are just with stuff that is simply because he's only played the position for 1 year. Like, none of it's like movement skills or anything like that. It's all like, you know, he doesn't necessarily know how to take on a block yet in the trenches. He doesn't necessarily know how to read a running play or process or have good feel for blocking schemes. I mean, you can't really expect that to come in 1 year of linebacker play. So that, I think, is all going to come out eventually. And I think that these next two guys, like I mentioned, it's really going to be interesting to see if, you know, some of these teams see that and go the other way. I'm blanking on the guy that the Niners picked last year, who we both really liked, who was a linebacker too. But he kind of was kind of the start of this wave too of these like bigger athletic linebackers that could play in the slot.
Was it Roquan Smith?
No, it wasn't Roquan. I'm trying to think who it was. I'll look it up when we can move on to the next guy. But I think the biggest thing is that, you know, Belichick mentioned it at his pre-draft press conference. A lot of people have kind of taken that line and run with it, that a lot of these tight ends and a lot of these big slot receivers are giving defenses a lot of trouble because they're putting these like 5'10", 5'11", slot cornerbacks on guys that are 6'2", 6'3". And at some point in time, you got to draft somebody or develop somebody that's going to defend those big guys. And maybe, you know, a lot of people have kind of put the Patriots on Jojuwan Williams because he's a bigger corner that maybe could play like a slot linebacker, slot cornerback, box safety type role instead of perimeter corner in the NFL to kind of do that. Maybe it's one of these linebackers. Let's transition. Let's just talk about Terrell Hanks, who I think is a little bit of a similar player to Jermaine Pratt. Both, again, 6'2", 240 pounds, versatile slot linebacker, off-the-ball linebacker type prospect.
Yeah, and I kind of like watching his film because when he hits you, you go down fast, man.
Yeah.
Like, this guy really brings the lumber, and I like that. I mean, I think you need that from every linebacker. You know, you can't have sort of an arm tackler there. And he's got a lot of experience in that role. You know, he's always sort of – it looks like from his film, it seems like he's always sort of like a little bit on the outside of things, either on the weak side or, you know, sort of off the ball. And I just like how I like his instincts. You know, I feel like he's just got a good nose for the ball. He's always around it. I think he's aggressive. I like him for the most part. I mean, I don't think he's necessarily like one of these guys that's going to come in and be a stud or anything like that. I think we're starting to get into the, like, you know, half good linebacker, half good special teams player, you know. Yeah. But that's kind of what I see out of him.
Yeah, I think we're in that as soon as we get past the Devins, honestly, at the top. But I think the things that you like about him, first of all, he had 15 career takeaways at New Mexico State, which is pretty crazy. 8 interceptions, 7 forced fumbles. And like you said, he's a thumper. You know, he's the guy that you really are going to feel him every single time he makes a tackle on you, which to add that to kind of the role that he played with the versatility is pretty rare, I would say, you know, to have a guy that can really bring it like that in the running game, but also then go and cover tight ends and slot receivers in the slot role. That's pretty good. I think that he makes up for a lot of his athletic deficiencies with instincts and also just play recognition and a decent, I would say, burst to like close and tackle as well. And then obviously the tackling itself. Now, the issue with Hanks is that he ran a 4.98 40 at the combine.
Yeah, that's strange, so, man. He doesn't play that slow.
No. So he's one of those guys where you really need to trust the tape. Right. Yeah. Like, and I think the biggest thing is that he doesn't play that slow. And I think that it's because he's often, you know, moving towards his target already because his instincts are really good. Yeah. So even though he might not be the most athletic guy, he's, you know, able to kind of make up for it a little bit with his instincts and his play recognition. But he's certainly, I mean, you run a 4.98, like that's slower than like what Chris Lindstrom ran.
Yeah.
So like we're talking about a guy that has some serious question marks about his, you know, speed and ability to not only cover sideline to sideline, but also if you get him stuck in a situation where he's got his back to the quarterback and he's running downfield with somebody in coverage, you know, that's going to maybe be a little bit, you know, dicey as well. The guy from the 49ers I'm thinking of was Fred Warner.
Oh, yeah, the guy from BYU.
Yeah, who I think is a lot like these two guys.
Yes.
A little similar. And I thought that the Patriots might be interested in Warner. He obviously ended up going to the 49ers. Maybe they kind of turn the page and they look at one of these two guys. But I think that both Hanks and Pratt are fit the system in terms of their size and their measurables, which is tough to do for a linebacker, especially nowadays. There's a lot of guys in this class at linebacker who I just scratched off instantly as Patriots guys because they're like 230 pounds. And it's right. Like, yeah, you know, maybe they see them as like, you know, a safety or something like that. But that guy is not playing linebacker in New England system. So another guy that the Patriots, I think, late in this process, moving on to Jelani Tavai from Hawaii, all of a sudden, a lot of mock drafts. I know Dane Brugler from The Athletic, who is a very, very good draft guy, has the Patriots taking Tavai in the second round. He was kind of a guy that was certainly laid on my radar, who was all of a sudden very much in the mix, I think, on day two.
I really like him, to be honest. I didn't expect to like him that much. But the thing, he's just so relentless, man.
Yeah.
You know, like one of my favorite plays wasn't even like a positive play for his team. It was against Wyoming, and this Wyoming running back, I forget his name, was having just this huge game. And like it was a run basically up the middle, and he breaks off for like a 50-yard gain or something like that. And at the beginning of the play, Tavai goes into the middle. You would think he'd be 20 yards behind the play, even if he sprinted back as soon as he made the wrong read. But like by the time he gets tackled like 50, 60 yards downfield, Tavai's right there. And I had to watch it again. It's like, how did he get there? You know? Yeah. And he's also a guy that like is very strong and uses his hands well against tackles when he's on the edge.
Yeah.
And Hawaii did a good job pretty much of moving him around. He's also another guy that I really like when he's coming in on blitzes. He just comes with force. You know, I just think, you know, I think he could be one of those sneaky diamonds in the rough type guys. And another guy that I think would be great on special teams.
Yeah, I think that that's a great description of him as a diamond in the rough type guy. And I think that the reason why some of these mocks are mocking him to the Patriots in like the second and third round is exactly that, because they always like somebody in a draft that a lot higher or a lot higher on somebody than other people are, right? Like there's always that one guy where they're everyone's like, oh, we had that guy. You know, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, but we had that guy in like the fourth or fifth round and they just took him in the second. That's kind of where people are going with Jelani Tavai. He is a big guy. He's 250 pounds, but he doesn't move like that. He's a very fluid mover. There were some highlights of him at his pro day where he just looked really, really smooth in some of the linebacker drills that he was doing, where his hips were just, you know, opening up and turning directions, and he was able to really move without any real you know, kind of hitches or anything like that in his movements. That I think is really good. One like little nuance thing that I saw while watching him is that he'll adjust his pursuit angles, like as he's getting kind of flanked. He's very, very good at kind of, you know, being able to not just be shy out of a cannon in one direction, right? Like he can really kind of move himself with the running play and adjust to where the ball is going very well. Very good eye discipline as well, kind of fits into that too. There's a couple of plays that I, you know, watched on his tape where there's some misdirection type stuff, you know, reverses or what it may have you, that a lot of young linebackers or linebackers in general would be nowhere near the ball. You know, they'd be completely fooled. And this guy has really great eye discipline, really good focus. Like it's like kind of scary, like how he just like is like staring at the ball the entire time with a really immense amount of focus. You like that about him too. I think the only concern, and it's not even a concern, it's just like, you know, the only like kind of thing that could really, you know, make or break him is I think that some of his pursuit speed is hustle, which is great, but I don't know how fast or athletic he really is. You know, in terms of NFL standards, obviously we're talking now. The hustle is awesome. You know, everybody wants to see a guy hustle like that. But I think that at the same time, you know, you wonder how much of it is hustle and how much of it is actual pure, you know, functional athleticism. I don't believe he was invited to the combine, or if he was, he didn't participate, I don't think. So we don't have any combine measurables or any drills or anything like that. Oh, no, he was there. He just didn't participate. So we don't know exactly, you know, what he would have ran in the 40 or anything like that. But don't be surprised if you hear Jelani Tavai in the second or third round to New England, is, I guess, what we're saying. Let's talk before we wrap this portion up of some of these later round guys that, you know, this fit the system. And I think, you know, after Juwan Bentley and Christian Sam last year, you can never sleep on this. The first guy I want to start with is Trey Lamar from Clemson, who is just a massive linebacker, like kind of in that like Dante Hightower type mold in terms of his size, not in terms of his polish or anything like that, but just in terms of his size. He's very aggressive as well. And he's kind of that in the phone booth type linebacker.
Yeah. I like that about him. And he seems pretty athletic, although it seems like when he's running around out there, he's like all hands and arms and like, you know, he's a little bit all over the place. But like sometimes, you know, he's able to make up with it, make up for it, you know, just by how quickly he can get somewhere sometimes. I mean, you know, he's one of these guys where I feel like, you know, with the right coaching, he might turn into something. But he's just a little inconsistent in terms of, you know, where he thinks the ball's going and where it ends up going and stuff like that. But I do think he's a good enough athlete and he's a big enough guy that something could be there if, you know, if you coached him up right.
Yeah, he's exactly kind of what the Patriots look for a lot of the time in these linebackers. He's just going to clog running lanes, take on blocks, hit people really hard, and just, you know, he's going to be a pretty good run defender, I would say, at the next level. And he's like another great example of kind of how scheme fit and coaching can kind of, you know, put a guy in a position to succeed. And the Patriots, if they do draft a guy like Trey Lamar and he ends up playing, aren't going to say to Trey Lamar, you know, you need to go cover this running back 20 yards down the field, because they know that he's not going to be any good at that, or he's not really playing to his strength. But they are going to ask him to go play on first and second down and go hit some people. And that's like something that he can obviously excel at. So I think that that's really, you know, a lot of these guys, like I mentioned, it's fitting them into roles, you know, like either a two down linebacker role, for example, or a guy that is going to come off the field on passing downs. Trey Lamar can really do that, I think, and do it pretty well. And when we start looking at kind of their linebacker depth chart, I think they're in pretty good shape. But Alandon Roberts is a free agent after next year, and there's going to be some turnover. And, you know, Kyle Van Noy, I think, is a free agent as well. But I hope and expect them to maybe work out an extension with him. But at the same time, I think that, you know, you kind of start looking at some guys that could potentially fill those roles. Obviously, you have Juwan Bentley, who a lot of people are hoping are going to be able to do that. And I still think he can. But I think that that's kind of where we're heading with Trey Lamar. The other guy that kind of fits that bill is Otoro Alaka, who's a little bit more under the radar. I've seen a lot of mocks that, like, you know, full seven-round mocks and stuff like that have him undrafted. But he's the type of guy as well that fits that, you know, one of the better run defenders in college football last year, actually.
Yeah, and I like that about him. I wouldn't say he necessarily has it's hard to say sometimes when you're watching film and you're not seeing these guys in person exactly how fast these guys are and stuff like that. And even the combine doesn't tell the whole story. So I don't know. I can't gauge really his speed. So it seems like sometimes he's got the ability to sort of get to the edge on time and all that stuff. Other times I'm not sure. But I do think he could be a capable run defender. I don't really see him as, like, you know, much of an asset in pass coverage. But I, you know, the other thing too is I feel like he's a little bit inconsistent with his reads. But I do think he is another guy. I see him like a lot like Lamar. Like I see him as a guy who you could, you know, sort of mold a little bit over time and sort of get him a little bit better with the mental aspect of the game, and, you know, and see what you can do with his, you know, with his size and speed combo. But like I said, it's kind of tough for me to judge exactly how fast he is. It's just a little bit tough for that.
Yeah. So he ran a 4.82 at the combine, which obviously isn't great. So that, I think, kind of puts into perspective his sideline to sideline speed and kind of ability to stay on the field in coverage. But that said, you know, it's not gospel, obviously, but he graded out extremely highly against the run in PFF system, which is something that Juwan Bentley did as well. A guy that, you know, obviously has translated very well. He's the type of guy I think that really has a great feel and kind of understanding and also aggressiveness in the run game to really kind of play on first and second down. He has that build about him too. And he also, you know, from, you know, kind of reports has improved dramatically from 2017 to 2018 with his instincts and like kind of his run reads and stuff like that, which you always like to see, you know, with these guys that make these big kind of leaps from year one to year two. So I think that, you know, again, I think that he's one of those guys that he's not probably going to play very much in coverage. Maybe he plays like in some like a little underneath zone drops and stuff like that, which is like what they did with Bentley last year. Like it wasn't like they were asking Bentley to drop 20 yards down the field too often. You know, they were really asking him to play these little, you know, 5 to 7, you know, hook curl zone type stuff, which, you know, he did pretty well. So I think that, you know, the biggest thing though is he's as good as he graded out and against the run in PFF system is as bad as he did in coverage. I think his grade in coverage was like below 50 or something like that. You know, it was pretty much a disaster. So I think that, you know, again, these are two guys in Lamar and Alaka who I feel comfortable with probably like in the seventh round as kind of like, you know, let's see, let's get these guys in here. Those four seventh round picks are kind of, in my eyes, like almost like extensions of the undrafted class.
Right.
So basically just guys that you don't want to leave up to the undrafted. The Patriots in the past, you know, they have a very small board, and a lot of the times, by the time the seventh round rolls around, a lot their entire board is pretty much gone. So they're taking guys at that point who they are kind of penciling in as priority free agents, as guys top of the line undrafted rookies that they just want to kind of throw a draft pick on so they don't have to compete with other teams. You know, guys like Danny Etling, I think, and Ryan Izzo last year were definitely fitting that mold of guys that they probably could have passed on and had them pick them up in as UDFAs, but you might as well just draft them at that point.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just look at this linebacker class and it's just, you know, there's no guy.
You don't have to waste any more time on the linebacker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that way. Yeah. And now watch one of them will turn out to be an All-Pro.
Yeah, I mean, right. Like, that's the thing is, you know, there's always room for an improvement, and there's always the chance, you know, that me and Adam, us geniuses, are wrong. You know, that's always potentially true. Adam, how are you feeling about Game 7 tonight?
I think the Bruins will win. And this is funny because, like, I'm not usually, like, that savvy about hockey, but I know a lot of people who are. And, my brother-in-law is like a big hockey guy and like coaches it at the youth level and stuff like that. He said as long as they had won Game 6, they'll win Game 7. So I'm going with him.
Okay, well, a lot of people have that opinion that because Game 7's at home and they have the momentum from Game 6 that they're going to win tonight in Game 7. There's also the Celtics-Bucks series. I know a lot of people are going to listen to this probably after Game 7 happens. But if you want to place a wager, there's only one place to get all of the action. Grab the odds and allow some experts at betonline.ag do the heavy lifting for you. Sports, live betting, virtual casino, you name it. BetOnline.ag is CLNS Media's preferred sportsbook online. If you're feeling lucky about the Bruins tonight in Game 7, or maybe the Bucks and the Celtics, go to betonline.ag or use the promo code CLNS50 or go to clnsmedia.com/Pats22 to support this podcast and get 50% signing bonus. That is CLNS50 or clnsmedia.com/Pats22. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. I'm not a betting man, but if I was, I would bet on the Bruins tonight. But I did pick against the Bruins at one point, because I have been burned by them a couple of different times in these types of situations in my life. So we'll see what happens. But before we wrap up the podcast, this is obviously the last time that we're going to talk to you before the draft on Thursday. So Adam and I wanted to kind of give some parting shots. The one thing I wanted to do as part of this draft preview was kind of build like a 5 to 6 player board of the most realistic options that we think that the Patriots might be in play at 32 for the Pats at the end of the first round. Obviously, you know, we could sit here and talk about trade scenarios and will they trade up, will they trade down, will they trade out? We don't really know. We'll see what happens. Obviously, that's always a possibility with Bill Belichick. But Adam, give me one guy at 32 that you just think is definitely in play there and potentially on their board.
Well, you know, maybe a couple weeks ago, I wouldn't have thought he would have been play, and it would have been in play. But seems like he's been dropping lately, for whatever reasons. But the Jerry Tillery from Notre Dame, I think. I think if he's there at 32, it'd be really hard to pass up on him. I mean, we've talked about him a lot. I mean, he's such a versatile guy. You know, he can play it on the inside. You can kick him out a little bit. He's good at rushing the passer. He's good defending the run. He can play three downs. You know, he's just a really, and at times a super dominant player, as you saw this year. It's especially against like Stanford and Michigan and those games, he's just took over. You know, he became a beast. Now, he wasn't like that his entire career, but he sort of turned into that, and that's the player you're probably getting now. Mm-hmm. So, that's the one guy. I mean, like, we're going back to the beginning with all this, but I remember, you know, we talked about, and a lot of people have talked about how deep and high level this defensive line class is. And it's just a great class. And I feel like if there's somebody there who's dropping, you got to take them because it is such an important position. I mean, they're all important, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. I think Tillery, you know, I love Tillery. Obviously, I've kind of, you know, pounded the table for him at all different points of this process. And I think the biggest thing, I did some research into it just to see what was it that was causing him to fall. And this time of year, you just hear some stuff that's just like, really? Like, this is what we're talking about? Like, this is what we're talking about with these guys? And I think Tillery is one of those guys that for some reason has kind of just rubbed scouts the wrong way personality-wise. Been described to a lot of people that have much, you know, more information on this than me as kind of just a weird dude, you know, like a guy that is just kind of weird and, you know, has had some weird kind of outbursts in the past before he really started to hit his stride on the field. He had like a weird Twitter beef storm about Brian Kelly a few years ago, where he said that they should fire Brian Kelly and hire Les Miles at Notre Dame. That obviously didn't sit well with a lot of people.
I think that was when I hacked his account.
Yeah. And then there was also in a few instances where on the field where he like took some cheap shots at some guys. There was one where I believe he stomped on somebody's head or kicked somebody in the head or something like that. And just kind of like someone described it to me as a little bit like Ndamukong Suh-like, which is not exactly what you want to hear. These, again, are things that, like, you know, we're just like kind of picking and prodding at these guys to figure out, you know, what's going on with their certain stocks, because you look at a lot of these kind of mock drafts that are based off of what these experts are hearing, guys like Todd McShay and Mel Kiper and all these guys that have talked to tons and tons of scouts. And some of them, you know, you look at these mocks and Tillery is not a first round pick.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, and you're just kind of like, you know, it's got to be something else. So I think the other, you know, names at 32 that, you know, I'd like to throw out there, I think that the Clemson guys, if Dexter Lawrence or Clelin Ferrell are somehow in play at 32 or even a little bit higher, I think that the Patriots start to think about trading. You know, I'm not talking about trading up into the top 10. Talking about trading up a few spots to go and get one of those guys. Today, Albert Breer mocked Joe Juwan Williams to the Patriots at 32. I'm sure that the Patriots like Joe Juwan Williams and his skill set a lot. That seems a little bit high for them at 32. The other guy that I wanted to mention was Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who reminds me just a whole lot of like the Devin McCourty, Patrick Chung type safety that the Patriots have really rode here over the last like decade. He is just a guy that primarily played in the slot for Florida. We obviously talked about him last week with Jordan. And I think that, you know, he's the one of those guys that does it all, you know, and that type of versatility. And I, you know, that's the type of guy that they kind of look for in terms of value, right? Like a guy that can really play different roles for him, maybe play a little bit in the kicking game as well.
Yeah, I think, I know people will sort of be like, oh no, a Florida defensive back with the Duke Johnson. But that, honestly, like they're nothing. I mean, I don't see the similarities there at all. You shouldn't think that. This kid's a stud. He was, out of the safeties we watched, probably the best guy we watched. He can really play. I mean, he's his coverage skills for a safety are about as good as it gets. And he's somebody who's instinctive. He's good in zone. He's good in man. He knows what he's doing out there. He'd be a guy that could step on the field very early and you know, really be somebody who could add to the team. I like him a lot. I like Chauncey.
Yeah, I think that that's a really nice pick. And the last, you know, kind of thing I wanted to mention for 32 was I would not, by any stretch of the imagination, rule out an offensive lineman with this pick.
Right.
I think that it's just twofold. One, you can never have too many offensive linemen. I know people are saying, like, where's an interior guy like Chris Lindstrom going to play? You know, where are you going to put him? You have three starting interior guys, you know, borderline Pro Bowler, potential Pro Bowler, and Shaq Mason. You know, where are these guys going to play? You can never have too many of those guys. There's obviously the Joe Tooney contract situation as well. David Andrews is, you know, very, very good center, one of the better centers in the league, but I believe he only has 2 years left on his deal. You'll find a spot, I guess, is what I'm trying to say for a guy like Chris Lindstrom. The other thing is that the left tackle position right now, they're going to have to throw bodies at that. And we both love Isaiah Wynn a whole lot, but he's coming off of an Achilles injury. And as it was kind of questionable whether he was going to have the size and kind of the measurables to stand up at left tackle. I'm a big believer in Isaiah Wynn. I think they should give him every chance to play left tackle. But a guy like Caleb McGarry, Dalton Reisner, some of these guys that can play tackle, I think are definitely in play. Greg Little, I would say maybe not at 32, maybe a little bit later than that. But a tackle early on in this draft makes a whole lot of sense for New England.
Yeah, and it's weird. I feel like the tackle position is sometimes one of those – positions where you get a lot of different varying opinions on where they're going to end up. It seems like every year there seems to be one or two guys that is way different than where he's mocked. So, you know, one of the guys I really like, going back to our show back then, was the Kajusti kid from West Virginia. I don't know where he'll be, you know, or anything like that, but he's just such an athletic, technically sound guy that he could be. I think he could be a good left tackle in the league. You know, on a very good West Virginia team from this past year. So, but I also like Reisner. Just, I mean, more as a right tackle for him.
Yeah.
But again, like somebody who's just a mauler in the run game.
Jack Mason on the right side would be like a dump truck coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's just a beast. So, I mean, yeah, an offensive tackle. And like you said with Lindstrom, like, you know, you can never really have too many good interior offensive linemen because, I mean, you know, you always want to protect the blind side, but what really gets to Brady more than anything when he can't step up in the pocket when there's an interior run or interior pass rusher who gets to him, that, you know, that's really almost his kryptonite if there is any. So you want to have as many good interior linemen as you can get. And obviously you never know what's going to happen with the contracts of those guys who are currently on the team. So, right. And Lindstrom's just a good player. I mean, you don't always need to draft to need, you know, you want to get the best player, you know? So, if they feel that strongly enough, you know, I mean, I feel pretty strongly about that guy after watching him as much as I have over the years. So, yeah, I think that would be as good a pick as any.
Yeah, so I really think that, you know, listen, Marcus Cannon is getting up there in age. I believe he's on the last year of his deal as well. They need kind of like a right tackle of the future. they need to kind of shore up the left tackle position. And then they also lost Adrian Waddle, so they don't really have a backup, a third tackle that can kind of play both sides in the pinch. So they need to address this tackle position in some way. I think that they do like Cole Crossen a little bit as kind of like the fourth tackle maybe on the depth chart, but to put him in the top three is kind of asking a lot, I would say. Yeah. So, you know, I really do think that a tackle early on in this draft. And the other thing about the tackle position, and then I want to move on to two more before we sign off, is that there's kind of a drop off to me, I would say, at some point in the round, like, 50th pick or so, depending on who kind of comes off the board when, where you're really looking at like 6 to 7 guys who are really, really good tackle prospects. And then there's kind of a, I would say, a pretty steep drop off after that. So if you don't get your hands on one of those like premier guys at the top of the draft, then you're kind of getting into like a little bit of murky territory after that in terms of the tackle depth in this class. So I think that there's a bigger drop off at tackle than there is at, let's say, wide receiver, for example.
No, 100%.
So if you're going to take a tackle at 32, I feel much better about tackle at 32, wide receiver later on, than I do wide receiver early and tackle later on, if you really need that tackle to step in and play right away. So that's a good segue, though, to wide receiver. Obviously, the Patriots have never taken a wide receiver in the first round. They did take Chad Jackson in 2006 with the 36th overall pick. So that's, you know, about as close to the first round as you could possibly get if you want to, you know, kind of get into, you know, into particulars about it. But I think that there is a little bit of buzz, at least in terms of the media and the mock drafts. I wouldn't say any of it's real necessarily, about A.J. Brown at 32, who we talked about a while ago at this point. But, I mean, what are your thoughts, I guess, first of all, on taking a wide receiver at 32? And then who would be the guy if you were to take that, you know, if it was to be a receiver there?
I mean, it's obviously a need, you know what I mean? Like, and this is a good wide receiver class. My only thing with that is taking somebody at 32, you'd have to feel really strongly about it, because I feel like you can get a very good wide receiver in the second or even third round with this class. I think it's a very strong class. Now, will there be a run on wide receivers? I don't know that. You know, like that's something you can't predict. Now, is there a guy that they're going to see that, you know, won't be there in their second pick, you know, or are they going to have to make a trade? I don't know. I still feel like that 32 has to be one of those real stud defensive linemen that's probably going to be there. But, you know, I mean, if I was going to, you know, pick a wide receiver for them to take it anywhere early, I think A.J. Brown's a good player. Like, I mean, I think you can't ignore his production. I think he's just a beast if you get him on the run into the secondary. He's a 230-pound guy going up against defensive backs in the secondary. I mean, he can do some damage. But a guy that I like, maybe not at 32, but somewhere, is Isabella from UMass. I mean, obviously I'm a little biased because I saw him so much this year, but he can do a lot of different things. I mean, his speed is undeniable. I mean, he can be a deep threat. He's good on those deep crossers. He's good on those go routes. And he's also somebody who's, you know, as you've noted in your article, somebody who's learning the slot too. And he played a little bit of everywhere at UMass. He played in a very sort of, varied passing offense. He ran a lot of different types of routes. He's obviously great on those, you know, little end arounds and jet sweeps and everything like that. I think he's somebody that could come in and be like a real weapon for them.
Yeah. I think the thing about Isabella that's kind of getting, you know, swept up in some of the, is he an outside guy? He's a chess piece. Like, he's a guy that you can move around all over the place. And in that sense, he reminds me, you know, his role in the New England offense would remind me a lot of how they use Julian Edelman, in that Edelman, sometimes he's on to the left of the quarterback, sometimes he's to the right of the quarterback, sometimes he's in the slot, sometimes he's in the inside slot, sometimes he's in the outside, you know, like, he's everywhere. So that's kind of what they did with Isabella at UMass, and kind of where he goes with it, you know, with the Patriots, if he were to be drafted by the Patriots. I think the biggest thing with the wide receiver position, you mentioned the run at this position. there's a chance that at the top of the second round, because there's a lot, I think there's a lot of really good high-end wide receiver twos or wide receiver ones in the certain, in a right scheme fit with the right offense and stuff like that. In this class, I don't think, I think we're all in agreement that there's probably not, at least right off the bat, there's no like Julio Jones or AJ Green or one of these like, you know, all pro, career all pro type receivers. So with that in mind, there could be a run at receiver someplace in the second round that could, you know, propel this need up the board for the Patriots. With that said, I think that the biggest thing about this receiver class is because of that, there is a wide variety of opinions on a lot of these guys.
Yes.
Some people have A.J. Brown as the best receiver in the class. I have him at 6. Some people have Andy Isabella as a top 10 receiver. Some people have Andy Isabella as the 20th best receiver in this class. With that in mind, that means that somewhere in day 2 of this draft, probably in like that third round range with either 73 or 97 or 101, the Patriots could probably get a guy, and maybe Mecole Hardman or Andy Isabella or someone like that, that they like almost as much as they like AJ Brown. Like, and right. I don't think that that's that crazy to say. So why would you take a guy at 32 when you could take a guy at 101 who is just as good, or you're in the same tier or in the same ballpark with, and pass on like a, you know, Jerry Tillery or a guy that can play and start at left tackle for you?
Exactly.
That is where my disconnect is with it. I would love to see the Patriots take a receiver at 32 and see Tom Brady go out there and throw for 5,000 yards. Like,
yeah,
everybody would love to see that. Like, bring on the fantasy football. You know, that would be fantastic in terms of just, you know, pure enjoyment of watching the game. But we're building a team here. We're not building a Madden franchise. And I think that that's the biggest thing, is that there is so much depth and so many guys are so clustered together in this receiving class.
Exactly.
That waiting is like probably the best bet for the Patriots. And I don't want to give away my entire mock, but in my last mock, I have them double dipping in the third and fourth round with Mecole Hardman and Jalen Hurd, because I feel like the best bet is to take that tier that they have of that like mid-round receiver tier and take two names out of that hat and just double their head, you know, hedge their bets on it, because you're probably going to pull out at least one productive player out of that. Yeah. And doing that to me versus taking like an AJ Brown or even like, you know, some other guys, like big name guys like a Hakeem Butler or Marquise Brown out of Oklahoma, all those guys are nice players, but none of these guys are, you know, stud flawless prospects where you know that you're getting a guy 100% that's going to be fantastic for you right off the bat.
Right. They all have a sort of a fatal flaw. I mean, Butler has got really inconsistent hands, even though he looks like a beast once he does catch it. And I mean, Marquise Brown is like, you know, he's 166 pounds, man.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on. So, I mean, all these guys, you can, there's big minuses with the pluses. So, but like you said, there's so many guys who it's hard to separate with, that it just, it makes more sense to wait.
Yeah. I mean, there's really, truly, and I'm not just being, you know, facetious here, there's a, from 2 to 20 in the rankings of this wide receiver class, you could argue, you could mix that up anywhere, and I would believe you. Like, you could say that A.J. Brown is your second best receiver. You could say that Andy Isabella is your second best receiver, and I would still believe you. You know, like, I could still hear your argument for that. So I think that that's kind of the difference between the wide receiver position and some of the premium positions of the other, you know, tackle, defensive line. All right, lastly here, and then we'll wrap it up. Quarterbacks, we got to talk about quarterbacks. Talked about it briefly at the beginning of the show. Obviously, the Will Grier buzz is starting to really pick up for the Patriots. I said, and I stand by this, I think that they're in two groups here with the quarterbacks. I think that Will Grier and Ryan Finley are kind of their early round, either, you know, what rats call it, rounds 1 through 3 options. And then I think on day 3, rounds 4 and 5 is maybe when you start to entertain Jared Stidham or Brett Ripon.
Yeah, I agree. I think if it's not New England, then it's going to be another team that has like an aging but good quarterback that, you know, that'll take Grier. You know, I think that's going to happen either the second or third round for sure. And the other thing about Grier that I find really interesting is how he's very polarizing. with sort of the scouting community. It seems like guys either really love him or just don't think he's that good at all.
Yeah.
But he is getting some momentum, not just with the Patriots, but other places. He had, I don't know like how you even judge it, but like he had a really good pro day from what people were saying. So, I mean, and obviously he had a great college career at both places he was, you know, like he was the only guy to make that Florida offense work when McElwain was there. And he obviously was one of the, you know, the top guys this past season for West Virginia. So, there's a lot to like with him. And then like a guy like Stidham, like later on, you know, he's one of these guys that played in that offense at Auburn that's not really like any other offense. You know what I mean? It's just kind of a little fluky. And
I don't even know what – watching Stidham's tape, like, I'm not even sure what their scheme was. Like,
no, that's the Malzahn.
I don't know what the scheme, but, like, I wasn't really sure, like, what kind of offense they were trying to be at various points last year.
And yeah.
Their offensive line was terrible. His receivers weren't that good. You go and you watch like 2017 Jared Stidham, you're like, okay, this guy's like a legitimate quarterback prospect. And then the training wheels just kind of fell off and the training got off the rails, whatever, you know, cliche you want to use. And 2018, because, and a lot of it, I think, is the team that drafts him is going to bank on the fact that his 2018 was about his surrounding cast and not about him.
Yeah, I agree. And then Rippon is, you know, I mean, he's got a lot of like, he's got a lot of like mental makeup things that you love.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's somebody that in the right offense could fit very well, especially with the short and intermediate game and his processing skills. He does a lot of the little things well. I mean, obviously there's questions about his arm strength, but if you're going to take a guy that late, you know, why not, you know? And he's another guy that a lot of people really seem to love. And others are just sort of like not so hot on him, maybe because of his physical skills. But above his shoulders, he's sort of what you want there.
Yeah, he takes some big shots in the pocket, and with his makeup, and you know, and it's good because he's standing in there to deliver a ball right down the field. But at 6'1", I think he's like maybe a shade over 200 pounds, soaking wet. When you take those big hits from NFL linebackers, the durability is going to be a concern. So, you know, you kind of have to, you know, you don't want to take it away from him completely because it's part of what makes him good. But at the same time, you're going to have to manage some of those hits. It's kind of like a running quarterback, right? Like you're going to have to manage some of the shots that you take when you're a mobile quarterback. Ripon's kind of like you got to manage some of the shots you take in the pocket, trying to make plays under pressure. So, you know, it works kind of both ways. I think the biggest thing is what you mentioned about there are like a couple of teams here in this draft that have aging veteran quarterbacks that could be in the conversation looking for the next guy. Obviously, the Giants are kind of the biggest one of that. The Washington Redskins kind of need an Alex Smith either bridge or maybe are moving on from Alex Smith altogether after his injury last year. The Los Angeles Chargers are a sneaky quarterback team.
100%.
The Green Bay Packers are a sneaky quarterback team. Aaron Rodgers is 35 years old.
Right.
You know, he's not a young pup anymore. Obviously, the Patriots, you know, with Tom Brady. So there's five or six teams that, you know, it's not a draft necessarily that has a ton of teams that need and have an immediate need at the quarterback position. Another one, the Cincinnati Bengals with Andy Dalton.
Yes. You
know, what are they going to do with Andy Dalton? A lot of mock drafts have them taking Dwayne Haskins at 11, but let's say they don't take Dwayne Haskins or they don't take one of the quarterbacks early. Now all of a sudden they're in play for a quarterback at the top of the second round. So that's kind of where it gets murky for the Patriots with Will Greer. And when you start to really kind of pencil everybody's, you know, intentions in and stuff like that, if the Patriots don't take Will Greer at 32, is he going to be there for them to take him at 56 or at 64 with those other teams that maybe are ahead of them vying for that, you know, quarterback and waiting, you know, successor, all the things that we use for the backup to Tom Brady. So that's kind of where the interesting thing is. I mean, there's mocks out there that have the Patriots taking Will Greer at 32, have the Green Bay Packers taking Drew Locke to back up Aaron Rodgers, have obviously the Giants taking Eli or Manning's replacement. The Saints, you know, I think they have Teddy Bridgewater still. They like him, but you never know with them, you know, with Drew Brees getting up there in age, what their intentions are. there's a lot of teams that have those aging veteran quarterbacks that could be looking for the next guy in this draft, because next year's draft is a little bit better at quarterback, obviously at the top with Tua and Justin Herbert. But after that, you know, if you really start to study next year's class, it's not much better after that, after the top two, than this year's class. So there's, I think that, you know, next year's quarterback class and the year after that's getting hyped up a lot because of the guy that's going to go number one overall, you know,
right.
Tua, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence, all these types of guys. But then really after that, you know, maybe you like Jake Fromm, you know, from Georgia or something like that. But
Lawrence isn't going to be there till 21. Right.
Yeah. So after that. So now we're talking about a couple of years into the future.
And, yeah.
So it's an interesting, you know, draft with the quarterbacks. I think a lot of people at the quarterbacks think that this draft is pretty average to below average at the quarterback position, but it kind of sounds like some of these NFL teams are pretty high on some of these quarterbacks.
People are in love with Daniel Jones.
Daniel Jones, Will Grier is getting a lot of love. Ryan Finley is getting a lot of like late kind of buzz. I think there are a couple of the, you know, again, these experts are saying that there could be four or five quarterbacks go in the first round.
Yeah. And it's funny how, like, you know, it seems to be the opposite with quarterbacks, like with other positions, it's like you pick out the tiniest flaw and it becomes giant. Whereas with quarterbacks, it's like, well, you know, he might be a first round pick, so let's move him up 20, you know, the 20 spots. I mean, these quarterbacks always get moved way up. I mean, who would have thought at this point last year that like Daniel Jones would have been considered a first round pick? But like a lot of mocks have him really high. So, you know, who knows, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty. I'm sure the players that play other positions wish that they played quarterback a little bit here, because if like wide receivers, for example, are getting treated like quarterbacks, then like DK Metcalf and AJ Brown would be the number one and number two picks of the draft.
Yeah,
you know, like if that's like how we were going with it. All right, is there anything that you want to plug?
Well, I'm going to the Harvard spring game on Saturday. There's not any media availability, but I want to see what they've got. I mean, they've got some really talented guys, and I want to see what their quarterback situation looks like. That's kind of a little bit up in the air. And so, you know, and then I'm also going to be keeping track of, there's a lot of schools that are going around recruiting this week. And, you know, there's, you know, UMass and BC and all these other teams are hitting the road and offering kids. And, you know, it's just funny how younger and younger these offers go out, you know, to sophomores in high school, freshmen in high school. So that's going to be another thing that we're going to be covering over at Mass Varsity.
Yeah, not to like, you know, well, this happened to me, but my cousin's friend is a very good hockey player. My cousin's a freshman in high school, and his friend just committed already to play college hockey somewhere. 14, 15 years old.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and it's just like, this is crazy. Like, I'm sure he's a very good player. I've never seen him play. I'm sure he's great. But, I mean, that's just insane. Like, you know, like, there's so much changes in your life and so much can change with these kids to get them committed that young. But, you know, that's kind of the world that we live in at this point. Over at clnsmedia.com, I have the Andy Isabella piece that's up right now. I've talked to him for about 15, 20 minutes on the phone last week. Some really cool things about working with Randy Moss, kind of his pro comparisons that he likes and he doesn't like, a lot of the pro comparisons to some of the, you know, shifty slot white slot receivers that again, are not exactly the players that he kind of models his game after, talking about guys like Golden Tate and Brandon Cooks and Tyreek Hill, more so than like Julian Edelman, that's for sure. So go check that out. My final mock draft will be up on the site on Wednesday. And then obviously we'll have you covered wall-to-wall from Gillette Stadium on clnsmedia.com during the draft Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We'll be down there at Gillette, you know, reporting on the picks, talking to, you know, Nick Caserio, Bill Belichick, whoever gets to the podium at that point after they make the picks. All I ask for is that they make a pick on Thursday night. That's it. Yeah, I know. Down there all night for 4 hours waiting for them to make a pick at the end of the first round, and they're going to tell us, all right, everyone go pack it up and go home and and come back again tomorrow because they're not picking. I can already sense it now. But we will also come back next week, or hopefully early next week, right after the draft, react to all the picks and all the moves. I wouldn't sleep on a trade for a veteran player either for the Patriots like they did last year with Trent Brown. So maybe that's in the cards as well. And we'll obviously have all your reaction here on the Pats All 22 podcast. Thank you very much to everybody that listened to all of our position previews. We dated back to what, February with these boys?
Oh my God. Yeah. We've watched, I think, enough film to like,
yeah, I think we're prepared.
Yeah. And you know they're going to just pick all guys that we didn't look at somehow, you know.
Honestly, I've done scouting reports on over 200 guys at this point. And if they pick somebody early that I haven't done a report on, I'm going to be very upset.
Yeah.
Myself, I know. With them, because that you know, I've pretty much covered every single player that anybody has ever penciled into a top 100 over the last, you know, 6 months or whatever.
I know, man. It's your film grind is legendary, man, and it's been a fun couple months, honestly.
Yeah,
I think this is one of our favorite times of the year, to be honest.
Oh, I mean, I love the season. I love watching the Patriots play. Obviously, I love you know, football in general during the season, but this is like, I think the most fun part of the process is the draft and studying and kind of learning all these players. And the cool thing is like, you know, once you start doing all this draft study, then all these players kind of become then the NFL players. And then you've known all these guys, you know all about their college days. And you really like, that's how you kind of learn, in my eyes, like learn, you know, all the players in the league, is by learning their names and learning their, you know, their playing styles and stuff before they even get to the NFL.
Right.
So that's the cool part about it for me. But until next week, signing off for Adam Kirchen, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.